You're listening to an Insight 18 special on Money Control.
The 2018 Football World Cup is just over 3 weeks away. It starts on the 14th of June and the final game will be played on the 15th of July in Moscow. So, this is as good a time as any to examine if the FIFA World Cup, beyond the passionate rhetoric of football fans, is a worthwhile economic pursuit for any country. We've heard, read and seen multiple news stories on the eventual financial imprudence of hosting the Olympics. Even a cursory glance at news pieces on the aftermath of the 2016 Olympics at Rio de Janeiro in Brazil will give pause to the most optimistic sports fan. Ghostly quiet stadiums that lie vacant and serve as parking lots at best and targets of vandalism at worst tend to do that to people. Then more locally, we have the long shadow cast by the Commonwealth Games held here in India in 2010. The financial irregularities that we saw there are now the stuff of legend. So, is that the same for a FIFA World Cup? Well, park your prejudices and assumptions aside. The jury is out on this one. On this edition of The Deep Dive, that is what we take a closer look at. The economics of the FIFA World Cup. And the big question at the FIFA World Cup, is football the winner? My name is Rakesh and this is Money Control.
The economics of FIFA World Cup.
First off, there's the prestige of holding a massive event which is watched worldwide and will be remembered decades later. This prestige, apparently, supersedes all common sense and frugality. FIFA estimates that approximately 250 million people around the world play football. For our purposes, we'll ignore American football, obviously, because, well, a game that's played with hands is not football. They call it soccer, but we will stick to football, which is what it's actually called. Football's worldwide fan base is over 1.3 billion. Most countries' citizens do not even dream of seeing their national team win the World Cup. And yet, they follow every moment of their team's games with an almost unbridled passion. Unlike in professional leagues, where a team's performance tends to track its financial resources, national-level football offers even the smallest countries a fair shot. That's why little Uruguay is a two-time champion and why the Netherlands prides itself as a three-time runner-up. Russia is going all out to convince Russians and the world at large that the 2018 FIFA World Cup will be a major windfall. Let's start with the prestige part, because in the end, that's what these events are about for the host country. A successful World Cup could mean finally arriving on the world stage as a country worth admiring. One publication's analysis was that when Russia hosts the 2018 World Cup, it'll have a four-week window to shatter many Western stereotypes that depict that nation as a bottomless pit of corruption. At the same time, for those who view the world through grim geopolitical lenses, like, oh, I don't know, a hacked election maybe, for such folks, the event will offer another point of view, of cooperation and congeniality, rather than a scheming foe. And that is what Russia is hoping for. For most of us, though, the Football World Cup is about being part of an international sports carnival at which the world's best football players compete. The goal is not to make a political statement. Whether it was Germany, South Africa or Brazil, all previous hosts have exploited the occasion to burnish their reputations for hospitality and openness. What does Russia say about the World Cup? That the country will profit. The 2018 World Cup, claimed the Russian organizers, could well have a total impact on the Russian economy of nearly $31 billion. A new report on the economic impact of the tournament claimed that the boost for the country's GDP could amount to between 1.62 trillion rubles and 1.92 trillion rubles, or between 26 billion American dollars and 30.8 billion American dollars by 2023. A study presented by the Deputy Prime Minister and officials from Russia's World Cup Organizing Committee claimed said spending on infrastructure for the tournament could add 150 to 210 billion rubles to Russian GDP each year for the next 5 years, as mentioned earlier. That crazy number is attributed to an increase in tourism, as well as large-scale spending on construction, plus knock-on effects from government investments. The report suggests that the World Cup will encourage Russians to exercise more so they take fewer sick days. Well, okay, that's just a very strange yet very Russian twist to the report, sidestepping that and back to the claims themselves. The World Cup has a considerable economic effect, said Deputy Prime Minister Arkady Dvorkovich, who went on to say, the tournament has already boosted the economic development of the host regions and will continue to have a positive long-term economic impact, unquote. The total expenditure for Russia as a host is expected to be around 683 billion rubles, or about $11 billion. That large amount doesn't necessarily include some expensive infrastructure upgrades and new stadiums that organizers say would have been built regardless. 220,000 new jobs have been created because of the World Cup, the report went on to say. Speaking of Russia hosting a world event, it's only in recent memory that it pulled all stops when it hosted the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, spending nearly $50 billion, according to one government estimate. The Olympics were seen as key to, wait for it, national prestige. Like the World Cup next month, Russia ended up hosting the costliest Winter Olympics in history. Wait, scratch that. It's not just costliest Winter Olympics, it was the costliest Olympics full stop. I'm not even sure what the ancient Greeks will make of that, or of Winter Olympics. That's beside the point. That profligacy helped turn the host city of Sochi into a major year-round tourism hub for Russians, though opposition activists accused the government of allowing waste and large-scale corruption. Familiar story, huh? The government later said that the actual cost of the 2014 Winter Olympics was far lower and claimed it would have built major rail and road upgrades even if the Games had not been in town. That claim is hard to buy when we look at what Deputy Prime Minister of Russia had said recently. He claimed there would not currently be an economic growth in Russia without investment generated by preparations for the 2018 FIFA World Cup. Deputy Prime Minister Arkady Dvorkovich said preparations for the World Cup had contributed 867 billion rubles, or around 1% of Russian GDP, in the last 5 years. He went on to tell reporters, and I quote, 1% is definitely very serious, a critically important contribution to our development for the country. I can say that without the World Cup, there would be no economic growth at the moment, unquote. Russia's economy bounced back to show growth of 1.5% in 2017 after a two-year downturn following Western sanctions and a collapse in oil prices across the world. But GDP growth still missed a government target of 2%. Vladimir Putin is under increasing pressure to revive the stagnant economy and address concerns about falling living standards. Russia's central bank, Bank Rossi, has said the World Cup would bring a small boost to the Russian economy, but also sounded caution. It said that the sports event could also lead to an increase in consumer prices. The bank said in a statement to Reuters, and I quote, concerning the second and third quarters of 2018, the short-term positive impact on the Russian economy will be the growth in jobs and increase in demand for consumer products and services, unquote. Perhaps heeding the court's observation, the authorities are taking action to ensure there is no illegal pricing. Basically, Russia is allowing no jugaad on pricing around the World Cup. Authorities have named and shamed hotels pushing up room rates ahead of the World Cup, with some increasing nightly rates by as much as 5,000%. The Deputy Prime Minister was quick to disabuse any talk of inflation. Regarding inflation, there will be no significant effect, he said, adding, the investments which were made are productive investments that do not create inflationary pressure on consumer markets. Unquote. To understand this better, let's treat the World Cup as a case study. Specifically, the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. The World Cup was a bad idea for Brazil, and even they knew it. In 2014, national polls in that country showed a 50-50 split between those who did and didn't want to host the event. Given Brazil's love of football, that's a grim start to the festivities already. A look at the event's impacts on the Brazilian people shows why opinion was so dramatically polarized. Exorbitant public spending on World Cup preparations were consistently criticized and opposed. Remember the riots leading up to the events? Between $6.5 and $10 billion was spent on developing infrastructure, services and stadiums for the 2014 World Cup. This figure is equal to the total amount spent on all of Brazil's social welfare system. In a country where approximately 20% of the population lives in poverty, these figures attracted serious criticism and gave for very poor optics. The government sold the tournament to Brazilians as a driver for growth that would enhance both GDP as well as domestic infrastructure. That old familiar tune. Over 1 million tourists visited Brazil during the World Cup period in June and July, exceeding estimates by almost 400,000. They generated short-term token economic growth, as most events do. The service industry did benefit from filling more bars, restaurants, and hotel beds. As one analyst put it, as quickly as the tourists came, they also left. Even projects building roads, airports, and public transport were designed only to efficiently and safely move visitors between transport hubs and venues. The word venues brings us to the centerpiece of the economic disaster that was the 2014 World Cup for Brazil, from a fiscal point of view. The $300 million 41,000 capacity stadium in the Amazonian city of Manaus. The much-touted world-class sporting arena is now destined to a future of underuse and degradation. It epitomizes the one-track focus of the developments, quote-unquote, leading up to the World Cup. Its state-of-the-art facilities contribute little to the city's infrastructure and now hosts a team with an average attendance of less than 10% of the stadium's capacity. All of this for just 4 World Cup matches' use. Talk about government profligacy. FIFA, which is a not-for-profit organization based in Switzerland, generated more than $4 billion in sales from the 2014 World Cup, where Brazil had spent $14 billion. In return, the football body set up a $100 million World Cup legacy fund for Brazil aimed at sports facilities, youth and women's football, and medical and health projects. This is what some Russian analysts say will happen this year as well. As we discussed earlier, with Russia expected to spend over $13 billion on the tournament, it'll be the costliest football competition in history. Economic analyst Sergei Drobyshevsky says Russia's GDP would increase by around 0.2% from April to September 2018. Hotels, restaurants and souvenir shops, he said, will receive most of the profits due to higher prices and an increased demand for consumer goods and services. The World Cup effect will dissipate almost immediately after the final match, economic expert Dmitry Kulikov added, saying all else being equal, the expected effect of the tournament on economic growth in 2018 will be equivalent to that of a statistical error. Another case study is South Africa, which hosted the World Cup in 2010. One Forbes report in 2014 indicated that the government of South Africa spent 11.5 billion rand, or $1.48 billion, on new football stadiums and renovation of existing ones. 5 new football stadiums were built for the World Cup, and 5 existing stadiums were renovated and enlarged. FIFA regulations require all World Cup facilities to be state-of-the-art, with luxury boxes and premium seating. The capacity of the new stadiums ranged from 40,000 to 64,000. Attendance for ABSA Premiership games, the top domestic professional football league in South Africa, averaged under 8,000 per game in the 2009-2010 season. Only 4 of the 212 matches played drew more than 40,000 fans. South Africa now has 5 state-of-the-art football stadiums that seat an average of 50,400 spectators and 5 renovated stadiums that seat an average of 53,000, more than 6 times the average attendance at a top professional domestic football match. Annual operation and maintenance of a modern outdoor sports facility can cost $10 million or more in the US alone, suggesting that continuing costs of World Cup stadiums in South Africa could be quite large. The net economic benefit from hosting the World Cup for South Africa in terms of current and future tourism impact is unclear. Some claim that it benefited tourism positively, but the question hasn't been definitively settled. Now back to Russia. Why does the World Cup require such a big amount? Is it because of an underdeveloped sports infrastructure in Russia or an attempt to improve the investment appeal of the regions hosting the championship games? The numbers indicate that the 2018 World Cup might just be a different experience for the Russians. Analysts at Nordea, which is a Nordic financial services group, noted that Russia could spend as much as $13 billion. 30% of the total budget, that is $4.1 billion, has been allocated to the construction of sport infrastructure. 50%, that is about $6.8 billion, has been spent on transport improvement, and the rest of the money, about $2.1 billion, has been channeled towards support activities. So the preparation of the 2018 World Cup was more about enhancing the transport infrastructure in Russia than upgrading sport facilities. World Cup-related spending was rather evenly distributed over the period from 2013 to 2017, with annual spending of around $2 billion. Nordea observed that, and I quote, "Though a non-negligible sum of money, it corresponds to just around 1% of the total annual fixed investments and 0.2% of the GDP. However, given that infrastructure investments have indirect multiple effects, the total contribution to the Russian economy may be much higher in reality." Unquote. The total number of tickets sold indicate about 500,000 foreign tourists, excluding non-cup-related travel. So Nordea estimates that a World Cup visitor will spend from $5,000 to $8,000 in total over the course of the event. They add that the experience of previous World Cups suggests that host countries' currencies tend to appreciate, though the magnitude of the movement is pretty moderate, with a strengthening of around 2%. Nordea signs off by saying data indicates that the number of international arrivals tend to increase 2 years after a World Cup event, which is linked to the positive impact on the country's reputation and tourism attractiveness. Some studies show that sporting mega events such as the World Cup and the Olympics deliver few direct economic benefits to the host countries. But the same studies found that people living in those countries consistently experience significantly increased happiness during and after the events. Which is probably why Qatar went all out to host the World Cup in 2022 and the United States, Mexico and Canada are jointly pitching for 2026. They're going to feel significantly increased happiness on both sides of the wall on the Mexican border that Trump is going to build. For what it's worth, Swiss bank UBS has predicted the winner of the World Cup 2018. UBS has used statistical modelling to forecast the outcome of the 2018 World Cup, which starts in Russia on the 14th of June. Reigning champions Germany are set to retain their title in 2018 with a 24% chance of winning the tournament, according to UBS. Brazil, Spain and England are the next most favoured teams in UBS's model. Yep, England. A World Cup where the host country will actually make money and England will be crowned champions? I can hardly wait. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, looking at the economics of the FIFA World Cup coming up. Until the next time I see you, this is me, Rakesh, on behalf of everyone here at Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and stay logged on to moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This is an Insight 18 special on Money Control.